A warning. Some listeners may find our opening to this episode upsetting. Listener discretion is advised. It's the 23rd of October, 1993. Two men enter Frizzell's fish shop on the Shankill Road in Belfast. It's shortly after 1 p.m. on a Saturday. People are busy inside and outside doing their shopping. Then suddenly, an explosion. The IRA had bombed the shop in an effort to kill members of the Loyalist UDA leadership, which met in a room above the shop. The bomb had detonated prematurely, killing one of the two IRA members sent to deliver the bomb. Nine others were killed, including two children. 6 days later, in Greysteel, County Derry, UDA Loyalist paramilitaries burst their way into the crowded Rising Sun Bar and opened fire on revelers enjoying Halloween party celebrations. 8 are killed, 19 are wounded. A revenge attack for the bombing on the Shankill Road 6 days earlier. These attacks were the backdrop when Northern Ireland played the Republic of Ireland in a World Cup qualifier on the 17th of November 1993 at Windsor Park. Emotions were high. Republic of Ireland fans were told not to travel to Belfast for safety reasons. Northern Ireland's manager, Billy Bingham, was managing his last game, but he wanted revenge for a humiliating 3-0 defeat in the reverse fixture in Dublin in March of that year. The Republic needed a result to hopefully book their way to the 1994 World Cup happening in the USA. Pride and glory. Everything was on the line. One night to decide it. One night in November. Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Curran and Gary Spain. Coming up on this week's show, we're talking about the Republic of Ireland's qualifying campaign for the 1994 World Cup in the USA, which culminated in that massive game against Northern Ireland, where everything was on the line. Don't forget, you can listen to us on a host of audio platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Wherever you do listen to us, make sure to subscribe and turn on notifications so that you know exactly when the new podcast comes out, and share the show on your own social media network to spread the history and heritage of Irish football. Now let's get on with this week's show. So Gary, in our last podcast, we talk about our failure to get to Euro 92. So tell us where we are now, I suppose, with the Irish team. We're looking ahead to qualification for World Cup. Is there pressure on us to deliver, to get to USA 94 after the failure to get to Euros?
Yeah, I think there was certainly, there was pressure. There was also a huge level of expectation. And I mean, the Euros was a tough ask with only eight places and seven plus the host Sweden. So there was a lot more optimism that we could get to USA 94. We did end up in a huge group. We ended up in a group with seven teams. With the breakup of the Soviet Union, we had the likes of Latvia, Lithuania playing the first internationals, and we ended up with both of them in our group. So we had a seven-team group, which basically meant a marathon, 12 matches for each country to try and qualify. But there was a lot of optimism. We had Spain again. We'd drawn them for Italian 90. We had them for Euro 84. So they were almost a regular visitor at that stage to Dublin. When the draw was made, Denmark looked a reasonably difficult third seed. But I mean, as I go on to say, the qualification had already started before Euro 92. But they suddenly became a lot more difficult after Euro 92. We had our own friends, Northern Ireland, again, who had qualified for 82 and 86. And they'd certainly made it very difficult for us. They were in our Italian 90 qualifying group as well. And I suppose it's always a more difficult game for us, particularly going to Windsor Park.
You mentioned the Soviet Union breaking up. So essentially, all of a sudden, there's an extra, six, seven, eight, nine teams that are thrown into qualification to get to the World Cup then as well.
Yeah, so it was a very turbulent time, and I would have to remember the, I mean, the World Cup in 1990 was won by West Germany, yeah. But East Germany, or the German Democratic Republic, played their last game, I think, in September 1990. So, and then was a unified Germany. You had the breakup of Czechoslovakia into the Czechs and the Slovaks. Yugoslavia was in the process of breaking up again. I think a lot of that came later in the 90s, so you know, forgive my history and geography knowledge, but certainly the Baltics got their independence, and that's why Lithuania, Latvia and Estonia were in the qualifying group. You also had the likes of Georgia. I'm pretty sure maybe Georgia came the next campaign, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe they were in that campaign. I can't recall exactly. The likes of Armenia, Azerbaijan, you had Kazakhstan. So, I mean, you had a whole load of new countries for everybody at that point. I mean, I'm pretty sure Lithuania's first internationals were in 1992. I can't recall if they played a friendly before they started qualification.
Well, I suppose tune into to our podcast for history and geography lessons now as well. On top of that, talk to us a little bit about Northern Ireland as well.
We played them in the 1990 campaign as well. So we first met in the qualification for Euro 80, and we drew 0-0 in Dublin in the historic game in September 78. And then they beat us at Windsor Park in just over a year later, November 79. So we played them again in the qualification for Italia 90. And it was 0-0 at Windsor in the opening game of that group. And we beat them 3-0. But it was the 3-0 in 1989, which more or less had us in Italia 90, was a bit more nervous. We took 40 minutes to settle. They probably had better chances. So it sounds a lot more comfortable than it was in 1989. But then, so we drew them again. And, I mean, they were expected to be in the mix for qualification. And certainly they started off, as it turned out, very much in the mix. But we were more concerned about Spain and Denmark, but seeing Northern Ireland as being perhaps a more difficult game for us in Dublin and Belfast than it possibly would be for Spain and Denmark. But I mean, as I go on to say, there are people in Denmark to this day still convinced that Northern Ireland left us qualified.
I would very much doubt that they left us qualified.
it's just incomprehensible. I think obviously it's not true. Can't believe, but they still believe it. You know, I mean, what do you say? You know, it's
So I suppose if we look at it. Just one more question on the teams in our group as well. Did that make kind of Lithuania, Latvia and Albania the kind of like, we're not quite sure about these teams because they're newish and now they're picking, you know, their own kind of teams as well, their individual teams from their own individual countries?
Yeah, so I mean, Albania would have been around for quite a while, but we hadn't played them. They were a bit of an unknown quantity, but they were, I suppose, Albania, Lithuania and Latvia were seen as banana skins. They weren't really expected to challenge for qualification, but all three were, and all three proved to be very sticky opponents, and they caused a lot of problems in the group. But really, Northern Ireland was seen as having maybe an outside, their fans probably felt they had a better than outside chance. But certainly ourselves, Spain and Denmark, it would have been the three that would have been expected to qualify. And of course, as I said, after Euro 92, suddenly Denmark became a totally different prospect.
We begin our campaign in May 1992 at home to Albania. Solid start.
Not really, no. It was very... Albania were in a bit of a shambles at that stage. The group actually began a month earlier when Spain kicked off and they beat Albania 3-0. Now, it was played in Seville in front of a small crowd. It was seen as a low-key game. It was comfortable enough for Spain. Albania sent an under-21 side, and so the under-21 qualification was happening right beside the main qualification. So Albania had only 9 senior squad members for the game in Dublin, and they had to fill up the squad with some of the under-21s. And so it was seen as being, look, a formality, we should hammer these guys, and it was anything but. We missed chances. It was a very nervy first half. We didn't break them down, and it was a real relief when John Aldridge made the breakthrough just about the hour mark. And of course, we settled down after that. We got a second goal from Paul McGrath. Probably should have got a couple more, but it had become a real banana skin and a very nervy start to the group. And it was also the chance, we didn't know it at the time, but we kind of suspected, we got to say goodbye to Mick McCarthy because we didn't get to see him in a green shirt in Dublin again after that.
And is that he was retiring? He was on the end of his career.
Yeah, so he was just retiring the end of his career. Yeah, that's but obviously a superb servant. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I was just going to ask. I mean, talk to us a bit about him, because I know Mick McCarthy, the Ireland manager, because that's my area, and you know, obviously, didn't see a huge amount of him as a player that I can remember anyway. But talk to us a little bit about him and I suppose what he brought to the Irish team.
Well, I mean, it was very much a checkered career. I mean, Owen Hand brought him in, and he was a tough-talking Yorkshireman, very proud father from Waterford. He was probably a controversial choice at first. There was a famous game, the home Denmark game in 85, when this journalist, I think it was Raymond Smith, said that he could outrun Mick McCarthy and he didn't have any pace. And it ended up with a race for charity. And I think Mick did his hamstring and missed the match, if I'm remembering that correctly. He did win the race. But once Jack took over, and I mean, he had the partnership of Mick McCarthy and Kevin Moran. And I mean, that's why Paul McGrath really had to play in front of the back four. That this partnership was so good, it was so solid, probably our best central defensive partnership ever. And it went on from right through Euro 88, Italia 90, and they were rock solid. And I mean, people question Mick's pace, but he didn't have to be that quick because he was always in the right place. And it turned out to be a fantastic player and a huge, huge loss when he retired.
Mm. So he kind of had that kind of wear it all to know that even if he was coming up against very fast players, he knew where to place himself rather than to be close to them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they certainly for some of the England games, it was saying Gary Lineker was could run a lot faster than Mick. But I mean, the obvious retort was, how quick can he limp?
Brilliant. I love it. But yeah, absolutely fantastic servant to his country and would later, I suppose, take up that mantle again as manager. But that's a story for another future podcast as well.
I probably should mention a game. I mentioned Spain's win over Albania, but a month before we kicked off as well, Northern Ireland kicked off against Lithuania in Belfast. And if I remember rightly, I mean, we weren't playing till the following night, so I was able to go up to it. And they were 2-0 up after 15 minutes. And I was looking at that Lithuania team and thinking, they're going to be whipping boys of the group. But they turned it around and got goals either side of the break and ended up drawing 2-2. So it was a huge blow to Northern Ireland's hopes from the start. But it also gave an indication that these guys were going to be no mugs and it was going to be a tough group.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Then our September 92, we're playing Latvia at home. A fairly comfortable result, although probably toughed it out for about 75 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Sheedy put us ahead in after half an hour, so that was kind of the floodgates. kind of opened after that. Now, I should mention again, a very crucial game in the group. Denmark, having come as European champions a couple of weeks before Latvia came to Dublin, Denmark went to Riga in August 92, and the game finished 0-0, and it was a huge boost for us. Now, it did give us a bit of a fright before Latvia's trip to Dublin, but thinking, that's fantastic. Denmark have dropped a point. It was 2 points for a win in those days, of course. And the feeling was that's a great result for us, that we would have been expecting to beat Latvia home and away. So we did hammer them in Dublin. John Aldridge got a hat-trick in the second half. It was very, very comfortable in the end. But the fact that Denmark had dropped points in Riga a couple of weeks earlier was a huge boost. And that, from the early stages of the group, we were in the driving seat. With just those two wins, suddenly it was looking very good.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I just wanted to ask as well, just before that Latvia game, we played in the USA, the US Cup again, just before that Latvia game. Interestingly, we obviously played the United States, but we did play Italy, which I found really interesting. Obviously, we didn't know what was to come, but I just found it interesting that we played Italy, you know, in the United States, in Foxborough, before USA 94.
Yeah, we played Portugal as well. Yeah. Now, I think if you read Roy Keane's books or some of the things he comments about that trip, certainly it was the end of the season. The players may have let their hair down a bit, and I don't think those games were taken that seriously. So
jocular fun was had, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think even Jack saw them. From my recollection is they were a nice money spinner for the FAI, but they weren't taken as being serious preparation for the World Cup campaign. Maybe it was good to go and play games in America, see what it was like that time of year, but certainly there were reports of a lot of players consuming a lot of alcohol in those days.
Friendlies indeed. So we beat Latvia 4-0, and then we have to go away to Denmark, and I suppose we'll obviously get on to the Spain game, but the two games in quick succession, in 1992, October, November, we play Denmark away, we play Spain away. They're kind of really important results, kind of as well in the end, aren't they?
Yeah. So they no. I mean, the one thing I should say as well, these days UEFA make the fixtures, so you've no real say in them. In those days, the countries sat down to negotiate the fixtures, and they set the fixtures. So Jack actually said he wanted the tough away games in the autumn of 92. He wanted them early in the campaign. And if you look at the way the fixtures fell out, Spain entertained Denmark on the last day in Seville. So normally, kind of a top seed might like to play the second seed or something, but we were actually the top seed, if I remember correctly, or I think we were top seeds for that group. Possibly we were the second seeds and Spain were the top seeds. But that's actually the way Jack wanted the fixtures, was to go to Denmark and go to Spain in the autumn into November 92. But again, very crucial games. On the 23rd of September 92, Spain went to Latvia and Denmark went to Lithuania. And both games ended scoreless, which was a huge boost. And I mean, I remember checking those, following those results. They certainly weren't on TV in those days. And it was a huge boost to us that both games finished scoreless. And suddenly Denmark had already dropped 2 points in the Baltics. Spain had dropped points. And we were going, Denmark's first home game as European champions. Massive match in the park and in Copenhagen, totally sold out. Huge Irish crowd. They gave us one end of the ground complete. I think there must have been 7,000-8,000. I can't remember. It was absolutely mobbed with Irish, and all behind one goal. Fantastic atmosphere. Even though it finished 0-0, it was a really cracking, entertaining game. We were missing the likes of Ronnie Whelan, Paul McGrath, Alan Kernahan, who had actually only made his debut against Latvia in the home game. he was thrown in the parking and he had the game of his life. He was absolutely superb that night. It was a good game, could have gone either way, but it was a huge point for us. And particularly, now that was three games in the group Denmark had failed to score. And they had drawn in Latvia, drawn in Lithuania, drawn at home to us. And even at that stage in October 92, we were in total command of the group, because the same night in Belfast, Northern Ireland and Spain drew 0-0. Mm. Now, Northern Ireland had picked up a couple of wins at that stage as well, but they had set up the group, so they started with about four home games on the bounce. So even though they were second, they were potentially in a false position, having had so many home games. But they got a good 0-0 draw with Spain. It was certainly a good result for us. And Spain had dropped a couple of points. Okay, we had dropped a point in Denmark, but that was a point gained. Absolutely fantastic result. And come October 92, we were in very good shape heading to Spain following month in November.
Absolutely, yeah. And 18th of November was a pretty important day as well, because Northern Ireland were playing Denmark as well on the same day we played Spain away. So it became another really kind of a pivotal kind of day as well, isn't it? This kind of seesaw back and forth of points around between these teams.
Yeah, so I mean, if we maybe start with Northern Ireland, Denmark finally got a goal. They were a little bit lucky to edge the game. I think the floodlights failed and everything was delayed and we didn't get a result for a while. But they eked out a 1-0 win, which kind of ended Northern Ireland's hopes realistically, given they'd drawn at home to Spain, had dropped points at home to Lithuania, and now lost at home to Denmark. They still had to play us twice, but it was seen as being they were already in trouble in the group. We went to Seville. Spain at that stage in Seville were virtually unbeatable. They had a long-standing home record. They loved playing games in Seville. We played really, really well. Niall Quinn had a great chance in the first half, and somehow he put it, I think it was over the bar. He really should have scored. The second half, Spain had a guy sent off with about half an hour to go. With about 15 minutes to go, John Aldridge, I mean, he was at least 2 yards onside, scored a fantastic goal, and it was chalked out for offside. Terrible decision, proven later on TV. It's on YouTube, you can watch it. But even having said all that, and even though we played 10 men for the last half an hour, it was still an excellent point. It finished 0-0. We still hadn't conceded a goal in the group. Okay, we'd drawn two games, but we'd gone to Denmark, gone to Spain, and were still unbeaten. And we were top of the group. We were looking in really, really good shape at that stage. And already people were thinking, we're going to USA. We're in. And that was the feeling. Definitely, we were very confident. We were playing really good football and in great shape.
I suppose then, like, the after that, then Spain play Latvia and they play Lithuania, and they gave them, both of them, a pretty big hammer, in which 5-0 on both occasions. And so that kind of drives their goal difference basically through the roof, essentially, for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, certainly in my case, we hadn't really thought too much about goal difference at that stage. But you're right, and I mean, it was a key thing for Spain, and they did give a huge boost to their goal difference. But certainly we expected them to beat Latvia and beat Lithuania at home. And they had already dropped a couple of points, and they'd also drawn with us in Seville. So the feeling was we were very much in the driving seat, and it was between Denmark and Spain, really, for second place. I think we would have been the favourites to top the group at that stage.
Yeah, and on the 31st of March, then, it's another pivotal day. It's an interesting group from the point of view that there's so many kind of days that you can pick out as going this way and that way. And it because there was three teams, essentially maybe four at the beginning as well, with Northern Ireland, who were vying for those qualification places. So then on the 31st of March, Denmark play Spain and they beat them.
Yeah, so we actually had played in the afternoon again because if you remember, there was no lights in Lansdowne Road. So Northern Ireland came. It was an early enough. It was an afternoon kickoff. I can't remember the exact time. And so they came to Dublin. And I did talk about the game in '89 when we beat them 3-0 and maybe flattered us. In this case, we absolutely battered them. We were 3-0 up after half an hour. We just, from the first minute when we were on the front foot, and Andy Townsend put us ahead, Niall Quinn, Steve Staunton scored direct from a corner. We were 3-0 up within half an hour. And, I mean, it was toying with them in the second half. And, I mean, some things from the crowd, which I think were taken possibly a little bit out of context, but Northern Ireland, frankly, were humiliated that day. They were, the second half, we could have gone for more goals. We didn't really do it. The crowd were chanting one team in Ireland. Billy Bingham felt it, wasn't happy. Their fans weren't happy. But they were well and truly hammered that day. And that effectively ended any faint hopes, because I think they'd gone to Albania and won, but that ended any faint hopes they had a qualifying. But as you said, that night there was a crucial game in Copenhagen, and it was probably seen as a little bit disappointing result for us at the time, Denmark beating Spain, because if Spain had gone there and got a result, it could have nearly knocked Denmark out or left Denmark in serious trouble at that stage. But even at the end of that night, the 31st of March, we felt in really, really good shape. And we'd drawn in Spain, drawn in Denmark, hammered Northern Ireland at home. We had taken care of Lithuania and Latvia, whereas the others had dropped points. So March 93, we were in very good shape. I probably should mention February 93 as well, because I mentioned in a previous podcast, we said goodbye to Dalymount Park. We actually said goodbye to Talca as an international venue. It was only the second ever international played in Talca Park. It was also against Wales. The first one in 1981 was against Wales. The second and last one was in 1993 against Wales. And it turned out to be, I think, David O'Leary's last cap as well. He got injured. If I remember rightly, he got carried off, and it was... So it was David O'Leary's last cap as well. We beat Wales 2-1. And I also remember an incredible demand for tickets, because Talca was so small. I think it only held 6,000 or 7,000 at that game. And but I was lucky enough to be able to get one.
Of course you did. It's not exactly casting the long shadow of Dalymount Park, though, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, we only used it twice, so it wasn't. I mean, Dalymount was certainly an emotional one. It was the home of Irish football. But Talca is still a key ground in Irish football, and it means so much to Shelburne fans these days, you know, and they had a huge campaign to save, and thankfully a successful campaign to save Talca Park, and it's great to see.
Absolutely, yeah. And as we kind of touched on the last podcast, it's these grounds are kind of, they're more than just a stadium to bring people to. They're the memories of sometimes decades and decades and decades of football history that lie within the walls as well. So it's really great to see Talca Park getting saved and getting renovated as well in the near future. So we have to go to Lansdowne Road then for to play Denmark, is the next game after the Northern Ireland game. It's an interesting game. Did we kind of sneak a draw, or what? How did we play?
Well, we were certainly very relieved with a draw at the end. I probably should mention as well, for this campaign, and it actually caused a bit of controversy in Seville, FIFA or UEFA had introduced the all-seater rule. So you could have used terraces for previous games. So even when we played England in 1990, the terraces were still open. So it made tickets a lot harder to get. Now, we were allowed temporary seats. Spain, frankly, in Seville pulled a fast one, because in both ends at the time were terraces, and they gave the fans cushions going in and set their seats. And, I mean, the fans just stood and watched the game. They did give seats.
I mean, that is bending the rules.
Oh, it was just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know how they got away with it, but I mean, now they did actually give seats. The away fans in Seville were down the side of the pitch, so they didn't try it with the away fans. We were all, it was a massive, I think it was 8 or 9,000 in Seville. I can't remember the exact number. It was huge, mass of green. There was huge numbers traveling in those days. But we were actually in the seated area. Now, most of the Irish fans were standing anyway. But for the game against Denmark, just demand suddenly incredibly high for tickets. It was limited to 33,000, 34,000. And so massive game. We went a goal down in the first half. We didn't play well. It was a mistake. I think it was a mix-up. I think it was Paul McGrath, Paddy Bonner. I might be doing Paul wrong on that one. But certainly it was a mix-up in the defence, and a ball over the top was allowed to get to Kim Vilfort, and he stuck it in the net. So we're goal down. We had a good go at them in the second half, but it wasn't looking good. And with about 15 minutes to go, a quickly taken corner, and Niall Quinn met it with a beautiful glancing header and beat Peter Schmeichel and grabbed a crucial equaliser. And it was certainly, even though we were the home team, it felt like a crucial result, a crucial point. And it meant we'd drawn both games with Denmark, and the fact that they'd already dropped points in the Baltics was a huge bonus at that stage. And I mean, they nearly made it back by beating us. So
should point out as well, Denmark are European champions at this stage. They'd won the European Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they won it in Sweden, but they weren't even supposed to be in it. Yeah. But I mean, I think that was the first goal they'd conceded, I think, first competitive goal since they won the championship. I mean, they'd beaten Spain the previous month. So they were a serious, serious footballing side. And but of course, so were we at that stage as well. And so were Spain. You know, I mean, it was a really, really tough group. So, it was a very good point. Certainly, I remember the feeling afterwards, feeling we got out of jail a little bit, but that was a really good result. It was a good point, an important result. And we were still looking very good for qualification, but we had a few banana skins coming up, and we still hadn't gone to Albania, we hadn't gone to the Baltics, and suddenly the end of season at that stage as well was probably not a good time for Irish players. Players were tired after a long season, so it was a feeling was they'd have to go and dig out results, but the crucial games away to Albania, away to Latvia, and away to Lithuania were coming up.
Yeah, and the first of those is away to Albania in Tirana. Judging by the result, and I suppose when we scored, was it a nervy affair for us?
It was, and it was a very nervy affair. There had been some controversy because Paul McGrath had actually, well, he was videoed down in Cork. He was being followed by RT and everything, so he missed the game. And there was a bit of controversy. Kind of the feeling in Tirana, the locals were saying they weren't any good and they were expected to be hammered. But it turned out to be anything but. And it was a very, very hot day as well. It was the end of May. It was very hot in Tirana. It was a dusty pitch. It wasn't a great pitch. And I mean, we started off on the front foot. We really went for them to kind of put the game to bed. But on their first attack, after about 8 minutes, we were left with everyone caught upfield, and they had a really pacey striker who outpaced Alan Kernahan and stuck the ball in the net, and suddenly we were a goal down. And it was looking really nervy, saying, hang on, there's only 8 or 9 minutes gone. Now, we quickly got back. Steve Staunton struck a free kick in from about 25, 30 yards, so we were level within a couple of minutes. But we really toiled in the heat. It was 1-1 till half time, well into the second half. They had chances. We probably didn't look like winning it. And Tony Cascarino came off the bench. I think he came on for John Aldridge. And we needed a goal, and across to the back post. And Tony was, I mean, they talk about in English football as the pomo position, position of maximum opportunity. But there was Tony Cascarino, the big man at the far post, and he headed the ball into the net, and it was a crucial, crucial goal. And I remember the song because we were celebrating coming out of the stadium, and it was Tony Cascarino, he must be on the vino, la la. And I don't know who came up with it. It was certainly, I'm not taking the credit for it, but I certainly loved it. And it was born, that was the first time I heard it in Tirana when he got that late crucial winner. And it was a crucial, crucial goal.
Yeah, Shakespeare's turning in his grave, I think, somewhere. but it is a crucial win for Ireland. Denmark beat Albania in June, and Spain beat Lithuania away on the same day as well. And then the next time we play is the 9th of June in 1993 against another tricky tie away in Latvia.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember Paul McGrath was back and he was taken straight back in. I mean, the fans, he was certainly loved by the fans. He was getting a bit of criticism on the media at that stage, and the fans let the media know who how much he was loved and everything. And of course, he rewarded us with a goal. We actually played very well in Latvia. We dominated that game from the start. We were two up. John Aldridge scored early on. We were two up by half time, and the second half was a bit of a cakewalk. And what it's been seen as a potential banana skin didn't turn out to be one. And again, a huge, massive Irish crowd at the game. I think there was about 3,000 Irish fans in the stadium. So
that's incredible. Talk to us a little bit about it. You mentioned Paul McGrath there coming back and the fans giving the media a bit of stick. What was going on there? Was Paul McGrath in trouble? Was he coming back off something?
Well, I mean, Paul had his own battles, I think, you know, and I mean, there was his battles. I mean, he was honest about it himself with the drink. So they had been following him in Cork. There had been, the media had been hounding him a little bit, and some people were giving him a hard time. But I mean, certainly he came back into the squad. He was welcomed back with Jack. I appreciate some other players may not have got the same leeway, but Paul was look, one of our greatest ever players, if not our greatest ever player. And he's also a really, really lovely guy. Yeah. And I mean, he repaid the faith in him by scoring the goal, the second goal that basically put the game to bed.
Yeah, absolutely. And good on him as well. We're away then in our, I suppose, our Eastern tour at this stage, which is on the 16th of June, 93. We have to play Lithuania in Vilnius, another tight encounter.
Yeah, this was definitely a banana skin because it said you were into the 16th of June. And in those days, I mean, the players would have been finished their season for about a month. And I mean, it was very, very late to be still playing football at that stage. And this was a much tougher encounter. We'd been comfortable against Latvia. Lithuania were a tough nut to crack. We didn't get too many chances. Steve Staunton, it was a free kick or a quickly taken. It was a shot anyway from outside the area, and it got deflected in. I think some people were giving it as an own goal, but I'd certainly be giving it to Stan. And that was the only goal of the game. They had chances in the second half. We had to maybe ride our luck a little bit. We also had chances to put the game away, but didn't do that either. But it was a hard-fought 1-0 win. And the kind of result that often gets forgotten, but those are the results, those are the wins that get you to tournaments, that get you over the line. And certainly by the end of the 16th of June 1993, we were in fantastic shape and we had one foot in the USA. And people were already looking at booking flights, etc. And certainly everybody was making plans for America. We were in incredible shape. I think it was nine games down at that stage. Mm-hmm. We were top of the group. We were in really good shape. And we were looking very good to go to America.
But whoa, 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 hold on, folks. It's not always that easy with Ireland. But we take Lithuania back to Dublin for the second game. is it a much more comfortable affair in Dublin?
Yeah, it was really. I mean, it was only 2-0, but we were 2 up early on. So, it was a much more, we were a formidable force in Lansdowne Road in those days. And I mean, those teams didn't travel as well as they were more difficult at home. I mean, Denmark had beaten them 4-0 a couple of weeks earlier. We beat them 2-0. We scored 2 early goals and we were probably coasting in the second half. Alan Kernaghan got a rare goal. Perhaps one of his few goals. I wonder if he scored any more. It was certainly his first international goal anyway. A crucial game that night as well. Denmark scored late enough to win in Tirana. We had high hopes after our struggles the previous May that Albania could cause Denmark problems. And I think there was well into the second half before they got their goal, but they did get the points. I mean, 2-0 win over Lithuania, 2 games to go, beat Spain, and we're at the World Cup. That simple.
Yes, indeed. That simple, Gary. Just beat Spain at home. It didn't turn out to be quite that simple, though. I should point out as well that while when we were winning, Denmark were winning their games and Spain were winning their games, so it's all very neck and neck down the final stretch. As you mentioned, Spain come to Lansdowne Road, come to Dublin, and it does not go as planned.
No, and I mean, first of all, we maybe got a slight warning without heeding it. Spain went to Tirana in September and put 5 past Albania, the place we'd struggled, Denmark had struggled. Mm. Julio Salinas, their striker, got a hat-trick. But having said that, I mean, the game against Spain in October 93, demand for tickets was absolutely nuts. If we won, we were top of the group. We were 2 points ahead of Spain. We were 1 ahead of Denmark. If we won, we qualified for the USA. The FAI had a massive firework display planned, which probably wasn't a good idea for that to leak out. And, it seems crazy looking back at it now, but there was a huge degree of confidence that we were going to beat Spain in Dublin that day and we were going to qualify for the World Cup. And, I mean, there was the expectations were huge, confidence was high. I mean, we were probably, we felt we were a really good side at that stage. And, well, it didn't exactly work out like that.
No, but in fairness, though, I mean, a recent record against Spain wasn't bad either, was it? I mean, we'd had a couple of draws in there and, in the past, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years, we'd played them a number of times and we'd had some decent results against them as well. So it wasn't as if we were kind of staring at these kind of world beaters that we were kind of afraid of either, was it? I mean,
no, I mean,
they turned out to look like they were.
We had beaten them in the qualifying campaign for Italia 90. Mm. We'd beaten them in Dublin. And I mean, we had a lot of confidence that we could beat them. And in fact, even a draw probably would have, it mightn't have mathematically qualified us on the night, but it would have set us up on the afternoon as it was. But it would certainly have left us in very, very good shape.
Tell us how it goes. Essentially, what happens to us in the first 26 minutes?
Well, first of all, I should also mention we had, I think it was Paul McGrath was missing. We were missing a couple of key players. And Jack played Kevin Moran as a holding midfield player in the Paul McGrath. Or I think Ronnie Whelan was out as well. So we were a little bit makeshift. And Kevin was a great centre-half, but it was total failure to play him in front of the back four. And Alan Kernaghan, who had been superb in Copenhagen, had been a real find, was badly exposed that day and had a really rough opening half an hour. Mm. And basically, Spain scored 3 goals in the first 26 minutes. Julio Salinas destroyed Alan Kernaghan. He scored twice. And Spain were 3-0 up. And the whole of Lansdowne Road was in absolute shock. We were just gobsmacked. We were 3-0 down after 26 minutes. Some people actually left. And I mean, it was just shocking stuff. It was absolutely a horror show.
I'd say you must have been able to hear a pin drop in that place.
Oh, it was. I mean, it had just been such a level of expectation before the kickoff, and it just went so flat. It was dead. We did have a bit of a revival in the second half, and John Sheridan, we didn't know it at the time, but he scored a crucial goal. He got, with 18 minutes to go, he got a goal back. Now, we lost the game 3-1, and I don't think Denmark still had to play Northern Ireland that night, but the feeling was Denmark would put 2 or 3 past Northern Ireland. But it turned out that late John Sheridan goal was absolutely crucial.
You mentioned the kind of, I suppose, the expectation that was on Ireland to play Spain, that there was probably a real possibility of us winning that match. I know you kind of said that we were missing a few players, but did the occasion maybe get to the team where it wasn't a case of, you know, we might win here, like we're buying fireworks, we're kind of laying out the carpet here, saying, look, listen, we're on our way here, and so perhaps the expectancy kind of really creeped in and got into some players' heads.
I mean when you concede 3 goals at home in the first 26 minutes, something wasn't right. Or I mean, certainly the setup with Kevin Moran in front of the back four didn't work. We were exposed at the back. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put your finger on it. Maybe we need to talk to some of the players or something. But the whole occasion, the whole expectation, everything went totally flat. And suddenly it was all doom and gloom. Mm. And I remember it was well after the final whistle that Denmark were playing Northern Ireland. And that game was nil-nil for a long, long, long time. And suddenly that was bringing the hope back again that Denmark got a late winner. I think Brian Laudrup scored with about 8 or 9 minutes to go. And even at that stage, we understood if they don't get a second one, we could finish ahead of Denmark on not in goal difference, but on goals scored if we were to get a draw and they were to lose in Seville by a goal. Which obviously ultimately it turned out. But the feeling was coming out of the Spain game, we have to go to Belfast and win. And suddenly Windsor Park was looking a hell of a lot more difficult in October 93 than it might have looked a few hours earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And the game against Northern Ireland is huge. It's massive. It's got all the permutations that you could possibly want in a football match. It's, as you say, it's a really difficult place to go. Is it fair to say that the political backdrop and the situation in Northern Ireland at the time, there had been bombings, I think, on the Shankill Road. Loyalists, I think, had shot up a pub and killed 8 people as well. In the run up to this, so it was charged. It was politically charged. It was emotionally charged. It was everything within a single game.
Yeah. So I mean, Northern Ireland the troubles in Northern Ireland had gone through, I suppose, periods. But and I mean, certainly in the early 70s, it was really bad. In 1972, there were a lot of killings. But generally, in the late 80s, early 90s. Okay, there were times when it was tense, but I don't ever remember it being as bad as it was in late October, early November 1993. As you said, the Shankill Road bombing, the Greysteel massacre, everything was on edge. There was a lot of tension. Add to that, the FAI tried to get the game moved out of Belfast, which
I didn't know that.
Oh, and I mean, certainly there were rumours we were hearing rumours south of the border that the game was going to be in Munich. And there was other venues being touted as well. And I mean, there was tens of thousands of Irish fans looking at flights to Munich. And I don't think there was ever any real truth to that. It was wistful thinking on the FAI or the southern media's part. That did not go down well with Billy Bingham in the IFA. It was going to be Billy Bingham's last game. Legendary player, legendary manager. They had been humiliated in Dublin in March. I think it's fair to say that. They were beaten 3-0. The crowd chanting one team in Ireland did not go down well. And there was also the feeling in Denmark and Spain that Northern Ireland were going to let us win. And there was also the feeling south of the border by many people, not the football fans, but of course, everybody in those days was a football expert. And many people felt, they'll let us win. They'll want us to go to the World Cup. And
tell me you're ill-informed without telling me you're ill-informed.
Exactly. It was no way Jose or no way Joe or whatever you said.
Absolutely, yeah. Am I right in saying that the FAI kind of put out a warning, said don't travel up to the game, don't go to the match?
So there was the FAI decided not to take any tickets, and of course it was all seater in those days, so the crowd was limited to 10,000. And I had planned ahead. So
were you there? Did you go?
I was there. I was at every game in that campaign. Yes. Yeah, so it's. I mean. What actually happened was it wasn't that hard to get tickets for Windsor Park in those days, but Northern Ireland sold all six home games in a block for £50. It was a tenner each, You got the last game free. So we were paying £30 and £40 for a game in Dublin at that stage. So I bought, I had to use a friend's address in Belfast. So I bought one of the packages, so I got the six games. And that's part of the reason I went up to the Lithuania game, because I'd already bought my ticket and there was nothing else on that night. And it was a chance to see the opposition. But I did manage, my friend actually took the Spain and Denmark games at a tenner each. So I was looking at paying £20 to see our game, which was less than I was paying in Lansdowne Road at the time. Mm. And I actually ended up giving away the Latvia and Albania tickets. I gave them away for nothing. I mean, they would have been impossible to sell. They were, it was actually possible. I managed to get some more tickets. So Northern Ireland then sold tickets in blocks of two. So their home game in September, I think it was against Latvia. So they sold £20 tickets for Latvia and us in August 93. And I managed to get some of them for some friends. Mm. And so my friends who had been in Lithuania, been in Latvia, been to Spain, been to Denmark, we had four tickets. So I think we had five tickets in total for Windsor. And as it turned out, with all everything that was going on, people were pulling out. So one of the lads, his father basically said, please don't go, you know, I think you're going to be killed or, you know. And I mean, it was that... it was a different time. I mean, I'd been up in 88. I'd gone to plenty of football matches north of the border. I'd gone to Irish League games. And I'd gone to games. I mean, I'd been to places like Ards, Bangor, you know, Ballymena, where I'd been to Coleraine a few months earlier. And these would have been mainly seen as unionist areas. And I would have gone in a southern car and everything would have been fine. But in November 93, it was very different. And we decided you have to drive in daylight, drive back in daylight. Didn't want to, I would normally park, still park off Windsor Avenue for Windsor Park. I worked in Galway at the time, and we had offices further down the Lisburn Road. And I arranged for access to our underground car park in Belfast, which was a bit of a walk to the stadium, but I felt the car would be safe underground, locked away in a company car park. And which I never used before and never used since. But it was different precautions because of what had been going on. I mean, it was just a very, very, very tense time in Northern Ireland. And who knows? Nobody knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was such an emotionally charged, politically charged game. It was, everything was on the line. It was World Cup qualification was on the line. So there was so much in a single game that just, it kind of came together in a, I suppose you could call it a perfect storm of a football match. The football match itself, what was it like? Because I remember it, even though I was young, I remember being quite a nervous night.
Yeah, it was a very nervous night. I had a radio with me and with with a wire and earphones, very basic earphones in those days. So I was trying to make it as inconspicuous as possible. But it was a strange one. I mean, the stadium had been very relaxed. We got in as soon as the gates opened. And we were sitting down relaxed. It was very, very calm. We were chatting to people around us. We were in the home end, obviously. There was no away end. And everything seemed fine. And actually, it was a crucial night around Europe as well, because England and the Netherlands were vying for qualification. They were kicking off an hour earlier. Wales had a crucial game. They could have qualified if they'd beaten Romania. They were beaten at home and went out. France had a big, big game against Bulgaria. France didn't make USA in 94, with Bulgaria got a late winner and knocked them out. So it was a crucial night all over Europe. I had the radio, but I was only focused on Seville, which was kicking off at the same time. Mm. But we did get a good laugh when England went to goal down in San Marino. England actually got knocked out that night because the Dutch got the win they needed in Poland. So we didn't kick off till 8 o'clock, kicked off the same time. And during the game, it was a tense game. It was 0-0. There weren't that many chances. It was still 0-0 in Seville. And two draws basically put us out. So if Denmark and Spain drew, we had to win. And if there was a winner in Seville, a draw would have done us. So it was very tense. It was very tight. Spain were reduced to 10 men. And, I mean, I was listening, getting updates on the radio. And it was also level in Seville. And with about half an hour to go, Spain took the lead. And we're quietly cheering and trying to spread the word, because I should mention the atmosphere changed completely about 5 minutes before kickoff, when the pubs emptied and a lot of people came in with a few drinks on them. And those that came in late were singing. Now, I think, to be honest, I think the stories of Windsor Park 93 have been a bit overblown. I mean, there was nobody hurt. There was nobody injured. There was nobody arrested. There was some chanting, which you wouldn't hear nowadays, but I think things have been exaggerated a little bit. I never felt in any danger, but certainly we did shut up once the pubs emptied. At 7:55, there was the Billy Boys and a few other anthems were being belted out. And certainly the guy directly in front of me was screaming a lot of abuse. Alan Kernaghan took an awful lot of abuse from the Northern Ireland fans, even though he wanted to play for Northern Ireland, but they wouldn't take him because they didn't enforce the granny rule in those days. He was from Bangor. He was from a unionist background. His parents were born in England. His grandparents were all from Northern Ireland, and he moved home age 4. He played for their schoolboy team, but they wouldn't pick him for the national team, so he came to us. But that was seen as being a traitor, a Lundy, by the home fans at the time, and he got incredible abuse. But Spain took the lead.
No, I just wanted to say on that, I get your point in terms of you know, there was no kind of physical harm in there, but I think the argument has always been that the vitriol from within the stand was what was really the heightened of the tensions within it. And of course, Billy Bingham then, you know, putting his hands up to the crowd and trying to get to get him more into the game and stuff like that as well. So I think it gave the image of a very tense kind of confrontation of a night, though, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what I think people were really shocked about was there was nothing at stake for Northern Ireland. But boy, did they want to win. Boy, did they want to deny us a place in America. And I mean, I think it for too many people sitting at home, they weren't expecting this. And I mean, a lot of it boiled down to the stuff the previous March. It boiled down to us trying to get the game moved to Munich. It boiled down to the fact they felt they were humiliated. And they were. They were hammered in March. And this was their chance for revenge. It was Billy's last game, and he was their much-loved manager. And certainly there was a lot of vitriol coming from the stands. They really, really wanted to win. And they said Alan Kernaghan got a lot of abuse. Pretty much all our players got abused, you know. I mean, there was certainly plenty of comments like Fenian Bastard and stuff like that was commonly thrown out there. But having said all that, I still think it was over. I mean, I suppose it's only when I got back to Galway the next day, all we talked about was going to the World Cup and qualifying. And as soon as I got back to Galway, wow, you're alive. I said, how do you mean, of course we're alive? We're going to the World Cup. And I said, but did it not kill you last night? And I said, and obviously, I mean, I only discovered how bad it was when I got to Galway the next day.
Wow. And they certainly put it up to us. And when Jimmy Quinn scored, I suspect that a lot of people, Republic of Ireland supporters, were thinking the worst.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Spain had given us a lifeline a few minutes earlier. And at that stage, there was a few minutes when Spain were winning, we were drawing 0-0, and at that stage, we were in the World Cup. And then Jimmy Quinn scored. I mean, it was an incredible goal. You can look back now and give him credit. It was a wonderful, wonderful goal. But, I mean, it was absolutely a kick in the nuts, a very hard kick in the nuts. It was, and of course, Windsor Park went absolutely bananas. They were belting out one team in Ireland, which, of course, they had heard 6 months earlier, and singing it back with plenty of vitriol as well. And, I mean, there was 4 minutes of everyone on their feet jumping around, going absolutely nuts, because a defeat and we were out. There was no route to USA with a 1-0 defeat. And certainly it felt at that stage that we were gone and we were beaten. And it was just the depths of despair for about 4 minutes. It was 4 minutes between Jimmy Quinn's goal and what followed.
It's so funny because it feels like a lot longer. It feels like there's 20 minutes gone and we're in the 98th minute and we really need a goal and blah, blah, blah. But I suppose a saviour did come out of Windsor Park for us, and that was Alan McLaughlin.
Yeah, and he'd only come on at the sub a few minutes earlier. And now, even though he'd been in the World Cup, the Italian 90 squad, he was very much kind of a bit part player. He'd only come on the scene. He'd played very well for Swindon coming up to the 90 World Cup. But the free kick, if I remember out the right, ball was cleared. And it fell to Alan McLaughlin just on the edge of the box, controlled it nicely and stuck a beautiful shot into the bottom corner. And suddenly we were back. We were in America. And it was just, there was an eerie silence for a second. And then I said, there was four of us in a line. We were in the back of the lower tier, the north stand, the stand that's still there in Windsor, the opposite the main stand now. And we'd actually very good seats, almost on the halfway line. And four of us from the Republic, there were only about 30, I think it was only about 30 Southern fans dotted around the stadium that night. And there was just suddenly total silence. Then we realized it was a goal. And to be honest, I lost it. And I just was up out of my seat, yes, punching the air. And suddenly about 3 feet above the ground, I realized, oh no. What I realized, I was the only person in the whole lower deck of the North Stand that was celebrating the goal.
That must have been an extraordinary feeling for about 5 seconds.
Oh, for a second, it was just, oh my God. And I mean, the lads, Tim, I'm still regularly in touch with Tim. He was best man at my wedding and everything. They were stony silence and they looked away and they'd managed to control themselves and I hadn't. I mean, obviously I was a lot younger in those days and it just meant so much. It was just such a relief from the depths of despair. And, but actually nothing. I mean, I just sat down. I sat down, and the guy in front of me who'd been screaming abuse at all the players suddenly realized there was a Fenian bastard, for want of a better word, right behind him. And I mean, he also, my earpiece and everything had come out My radio was, everything was, and all he did, he turned around to me and said, "What's the score in Seville?" So I actually, no, I mean, I there was certainly a few seconds there when I thought, I'm in big trouble now. I'm in really big trouble. And, but I mean, nobody actually said anything. Nobody, I mean, they were certainly abusing our players, but nobody said anything to me. Hmm. So, of course, I was totally disowned by my friends who I'd driven up.
I don't know him. I don't know him. Who's that guy?
It was silence. I mean, they were looking away and we don't know him at all.
But there is still time left to play. There is still like 12, 13 minutes left on the clock plus stoppage time. So, I mean, what happened after that? Did Northern Ireland throw the kitchen sink? Did we shut up shop and it became a bit more comfortable?
Well, you see, I mean, if Denmark equalised, we needed a winner. So, and I mean, Spain were playing with 10 men. So I don't know what the team actually knew on the pitch at that stage. I don't remember too many chances at either end after that. Certainly my memory of the game is it was probably petering out to a 1-1 draw. I don't remember Packy being under pressure. I don't remember us having really chances. Obviously, a second goal would have clinched qualification. I mean, I was absolutely glued to my radio from Seville as well, because if I remember the commentary, I think it even turned over. I think they were, it was pretty much, I mean, I was listening in RTE, but it was all about Seville at that point. And Spain were one up. Denmark were heading out of the World Cup. They were playing against 10 men. And they were certainly piling on the pressure, looking for an equaliser. And, of course, Spain would still have qualified with a 1-1 draw as well. So, and then, to make things worse, the game finished at Windsor Park, and there was still 2 or 3 minutes to go in Seville.
I mean, what do you do? I mean, you can't get up and shout about it. So you're just going to have to sit there and find some way of containing all of this crazy excitement anxiety, I suppose.
At this stage, I was totally outed. I mean, I was, they knew I was from the South, right? There was just no hiding anything, right? I had a radio to my ear. And when the final whistle went, Tim and the other guys, who actually I only met for the first time because other friends had actually pulled out, and believe it or not, there was nobody wanted to go. So we ended up bringing two guys who wouldn't normally have gone to football at all. But Tim and the other two guys totally disowned me. They left. So even so, they stood. I'm 100% on my own. They were about 30 yards away waiting in the tunnel to get out, you know, and jokingly, I think it was a joke, but it was, if we have to help them kill the Fenian bastard, can someone grab the car keys? But it was
So what happens then when you find out that it's full time in Seville?
So I stayed in my seat and I had the radio on listening to the commentary. And there must have been about 20 Northern Ireland fans at this stage standing around. And I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, I did not know.
Oh, so they're kind of all around you trying to figure out what the result was as well?
Yeah, so I was saying it's still one. I mean, a couple of them were asking me the result. I said it's still 1-0 Spain. And I was listening to the last couple of minutes. And they were standing around. Now, they weren't in any way threatening, but I was thinking, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I'm in the stadium, and I mean, I'm very much on my own at this stage. And the final whistle went, and I said, it's over. Spain have won 1-0. We have qualified. And a couple of them said, jammy bastards. they walked away. And I mean, that was it. I took my time actually getting up then, and I walked out. The lads still kept their distance from me. I walked over, and they wouldn't even talk. I mean, they were, oh, who's he? You know, so we kind of, the four of us kind of walked out, but it was three of them and me who was, and it's funny looking back at it, but I mean, it was fine. We went back and got the car. We were staying that night in Hillsborough, actually, with friends of mine. And we drove back the next morning. We drove back in daylight because it was still a tense time. I mean, November 93, just in the whole situation in Northern Ireland, was very tense. Mm. But, I mean, all that mattered that night was we qualified for the World Cup, and it was huge, hugely important. And, I mean, what a night.
Absolutely, yeah, an extraordinary night. I know Alan McLaughlin is passed, unfortunately, but I suspect he knew how important that goal was and what it meant to so many Irish fans.
Well, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we've only been to three men's World Cups, and that was the second one. And I mean, it just meant so much. It was such a crucial goal.
Absolutely, yeah. So qualifying is over. We are on the way to USA 94. Does the party begin almost immediately?
Yeah, it does. Now, there was maybe a little bit of a feeling that perhaps the team, we'd been so confident a month or two earlier, but there was a little bit of a feeling maybe the team has been a little bit over the hill, and have they just gone past it? But that actually, we can go on and talk about that changed completely. But certainly maybe November, December 93, there was a feeling we kind of fell over the line, lost to Spain, just got the draw in Belfast.
Yeah.
Needed the result in Seville.
There were two incredibly anxious games, though. I mean, you're going to the World Cup was on the line for those two last games. So you can kind of understand that it was extremely tense in those last two games with such a high price on the line.
Yeah, but it was. And I mean, with hindsight, maybe we were probably too optimistic going into the two games and maybe too pessimistic coming out of them. But there certainly was, there was a feeling, and things changed. I mean, Niall Quinn picked up a crucial ligament injury as well, so he missed the World Cup. Mm. And that was in November as well. So he was a huge loss. So, I mean, it was fantastic we qualified. There was a huge buzz. I mean, particularly qualifying for a World Cup in USA with so many Irish people already there, so many people of Irish extraction. It was going to be a huge deal. And so many people were planning a trip. Everyone was going to the States. Tickets were going to be a nightmare, which is another story. But it was incredible to be there. But November, December, maybe we didn't have a lot of optimism, but that changed. It changed big time coming into 94. And some of that was with the arrival of the likes of Gary Kelly, Phil Babb, Jason McAteer, the three amigos as they were known. And they gave a huge shot in the arm to the team, to the squad. And obviously running up to the World Cup in the warm-up games, I mean, things changed again completely. But certainly towards the end of 93, going into 94, it was huge excitement. We qualified for the World Cup, but we probably needed to find some players.
Yeah, maybe refresh, get a little bit of a refreshment of the team before we went to the World Cup. And that is on the next podcast, when we talk about Ireland and USA 94. An incredible journey yet again for the Irish in the World Cup. Gary, as ever, incredible stories. You're still alive, so bonus after all that. But thanks very much again, and thanks for sharing those extraordinary stories on an extraordinary night in Belfast.
Cheers. Thanks, Gillen.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Make sure wherever you listen to us to subscribe and turn on notifications for the podcast so you know exactly when the new podcast comes out. Share the show on your own social media network to spread the history and heritage of Irish football. And remember to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League clubs. It's our heritage. It's our game.